Hello, respected viewers, George from Ireland. Welcome back to my channel. So I'm commenting how Russia's been trying to expand its footprint in Africa for two decades now. You go back to the Cold War, and as Moscow would be keen to remind you, the Soviet Union agitated fiercely for decolonization by Spain, Portugal, the United Kingdom, Belgium, and France, all of which maintained colonies in Africa well into the mid 20th century. And it was one of the contributory factors to 52 African countries becoming independent from 1957 right up to the last one in 1980. Now, some of them were formal Cold War allies of the Soviet Union, only a handful. Majority were neutral in the Cold War, and some were allies of the United States and the Western Bloc. And that's why in 1961, the Soviet Union even founded a university named Patrice Lumumba University in Moscow, named in honor of the guy who was briefly president of the Congo. Now it's not prime minister, is now the Democratic Republic of Congo, the former Belgian colony, because he was overthrown by Belgian-backed Congolese mercenaries and murdered by them just a few months into independence. So Lumumba University was welcoming students from Latin America and Asia, as well as Africa. It's now Druzhba, as in friendship, really people's friendship university. So after the dissolution of the USSR, Russia's economy largely imploded, and Russia lost its influence in Africa. It didn't have the money or the headspace to maintain any operations there besides some very basic diplomatic activity. Even that was cut back. So his influence had largely disappeared, and Russia became synonymous with failure. It was just a joke in the 90s. But by the 2010s, Russia sorted out its internal situation. Putin had firm control over every region. The economy was growing very healthily. There was money to spend and seeking to regain Russia's position in the world. So he's striving for paramountcy. Now, Russia still offers thousands of scholarships each year to African students. And it comes with a four-year visa. The first year, they have to pass the exam in the Russian language and mathematics, and they can go on to a three-year university degree course. But if they fail to get onto the degree course, they can still stay for the remaining 3 years and have the right to work there, which is surprisingly alluring for people from some of the less economically developed countries. So there was Wagner, private military company that Prigozhin ran, and under its new guise, it still operates. And has been operating for 10 years in various African countries, such as Libya, Mali, Mozambique, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Central African Republic. But the urgency of the Ukraine war has forced Russia to bring some of its troops back from Africa to fight in Ukraine. And Libya, Wagner Group was fighting on the side of the Libyan National Army, the LNA, the so-called Libyan National Army. It's a very misleading organization. It's a terrorist group led by Khalifa Haftar, who's actually an American citizen, originally Libyan. Now, the LNA is fighting against the government of National Accord. The GNA is the internationally recognized lawful government of Libya. So Africa, you'd think, would be really good recruiting territory for Russia. And Russia's made surprisingly little effort to recruit men from there, because these are some of the poorest countries in the world. Look at Burundi, where there's an average annual income of $200 a year. You know, bear in mind that $2,000 a month is a low salary for a Russian soldier these days. So Russia's recruited up to 200 men from India, by stark contrast. Many of them repatriated to maintain friendship with Narendra Modi. Anyway, so there's no coherent ideology behind Russia's attempt to build this anti-Western axis in Africa or elsewhere. Some of its allies in Africa are Islamists, some of them are anti-Muslim. I mean, they're mostly authoritarians, outright dictators. That's it. There's no talk about communism or whatever, democracy, liberalism, illiberalism. You know, it's a complete hodgepodge. So it's really just opportunistic and transactional. And it's just coordination of interests. Your enemy is my enemy. Okay, we got something going here. So there have been coup d'etats in several African countries since 2022. Niger, Sudan, Guinea, Burkina Faso, Gabon. And this has brought to power juntas which are more open to Moscow's policies. I don't think that the Moscow was the wire puller of any of these ones. Their omnipotence isn't that great. So, you know, the SVR's presence is not quite so ubiquitous. There are various other Russian mercenary military, private military companies or mercenary groups who prefer that are in Africa, like Redoute, Patriote, and others. So there are Russian army officers, and there's some also bureaucrats in the Ministry of Defense who've got some financial interests in these various so-called companies. And there's actually sometimes an unfriendly rivalry between them. So Moscow enjoys very warm relations with several African states, such as Algeria, Egypt, South Africa, and Zimbabwe. So Russia exports grain to some of them, oil, gas, metals, other chemicals, and also arms. So now South Africa ratified the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court years ago because they're very moralistic, always taking a high tone on human rights issues. So the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin in 2023, and that was on suspicion of war crimes committed in Ukraine, including the abduction of over 16,000 children across an international border, because the Russian government said they did it. So theoretically, South Africa is legally obliged to arrest Putin if he comes to their territory. But South Africa has indicated that they would welcome him and he certainly wouldn't be arrested. And I don't doubt that he would not be arrested. So much for them signing that statute is completely hypocritical and makes a nonsense of it. But actually, he chose not to risk it and not go to a BRICS summit there. And BRICS, of course, is crucial to Russia's foreign policy. And they want to create more fora which are not under the Western thumb as they see it. BRICS, to begin with, was an acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. But earlier this year, it took on an additional 5 members, 2 of which are African countries, Ethiopia and Egypt. So there's Russia's trying to build a multipolar world and criticizing this unipolar, American-dominated world. Remember that Project for a New American Century came out in 2000, and their discussion document said full-spectrum American dominance. So Russia's also a member of OPEC Plus, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, but not OPEC itself, OPEC Plus. Nigeria is one of its African members. Now, the People's Republic of China has been the Russian major trading partner since about 2008, and that is increasing all the time. So there's a symbiosis between them. And of course, this has become even more vital to the Russians since 2022. And they recognize the cruciality of this relationship. So it's a so-called partnership without limits, according to Putin, but there are limits from the Chinese side. So Russia is ever more dependent on China to purchase Chinese manufacturers and indeed for financial services. But the Chinese are circumspect and they're anxious about secondary sanctions, and therefore they've restricted trade with Russia in certain areas. So they don't want to be subject to these sanctions. Now, Beijing has pursued a highly successful policy of broadening their footprint in Africa since about the millennium, when Western countries took their eye off the ball and were concerned with the Middle East. So Chinese companies, they have established factories all over the continent. They've got businesses of all sorts, from banking to telecommunications to hotels. They've purchased millions of hectares of farmland. So there's an annual conference of Beijing to which all African heads of state are invited, and they mostly go. Now, Russia is clearly covetous of the extraordinary sway that Africa, that China has in Africa, which was just unheard of in the 90s. So Russia has hosted a few African heads of state since the Ukraine war began, but they tend to be from puny nations, I hate to be brutally honest, like Chad. Now, the president of Senegal, who was chairman of the African Union at the time, Macky Sall, he paid a visit to the Kremlin in 2023. So that was quite a coup for Moscow. So in 2023, that's when the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, they published their policy document, and they said that Africa is the only continent which Russia can really expand its influence and is very receptive to Russian messaging. So the appeal is to anti-imperialism, to play up the wickedry of former Western mastery and say the West is just so hypocritical. There's one rule for them, one rule for everybody else. Of course, some of what they say is valid. So and says that don't just think of what happened to before the 60s. How about Western invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan? They might do it to you. So this trenchant critique of Israel's invasion of Gaza, that goes down very well in much of Africa. Remember, 45% of Africans are Muslim. So Moscow is very aware that Africa is the only continent with a rapidly growing population, whereas other continents, the populations are shrinking. So, and Russia is also cognizant that the Europeans are terrified of illegal immigration from Africa is already a significant problem, and they've weaponized it. That's how Russia has actively assisted Africans in crossing borders illegally from Belarus and Russia into European Union countries like Lithuania, Latvia, and Poland. Indeed, I know a Congolese who did that. So Ukraine's allies are trying to counter Russia's version of events. And Kiev says that, you know, Ukraine was colonized by Russia. So this is an anti-colonial war. Anyway, and they say, OK, there was a positive Soviet legacy for Africa. All right. But Ukraine has a share in that. 25% of Soviets were Ukrainians. So the only successful part of Russian manufacturing is the arms industry. So their arms are very cheap. They're not terribly good or sophisticated, but that makes them very appealing for some of the poorest countries in the world. Think of the AK-47 that Kalashnikov invented in 1947. Automat Kalashnikov is not too heavy. It's very simple. It's hard wearing. You can drop it in mud. You don't need to oil it, and it will still fire even if it's wet. It hardly ever rusts. Trouble is, it goes all over the place. Not very accurate. So, and with Russia, it's really no strings attached. Money, that's all they care about. So there'll be no concerns about human rights or legality. Eritrea was an African country, and it voted for Russia's position in the Ukraine war. So 17 African countries abstained, and 28 voted for the resolution condemning the Russian invasion. Because some African countries made sure the ambassador was out of the room where the vote was held. So there's only so much that Russia can do to expand its influence in Africa. China is so present there. Russia's got very limited economic clout. The European Union and the United States are actually still very important for quite a few African countries. They've got soft power. Think of Hollywood, film, fashion, sports, music, all things the Western world does. And Russia simply cannot compete with that. So anyway, but the Africans see that the Chinese economy is slowing down. There's a demographic time bomb. But, you know, Russia's also facing that demographic time bomb, not the economic slowdown yet. So Ukraine has some sway in Africa, has really tried to build up their foreign minister visit that country, selling grain and so on. So that's, I suppose, the situation about how Russia is trying and having some success in expanding its influence in Africa. Thanks for watching. Goodbye.